non-disclosure agreement so that we don't even know what he actually knows. What else could they be up to? What could they be doing now? We don't know. So it's really dismaying to me as someone who's been a reporter, been in media, to learn about the extent of how much is being covered up and then how much disinformation is being pumped out at the same time.
This is a story that's coming out on the Gray Zone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to publish it in like 10 minutes. I just Excellent. Have to basically hit publish, but then I had to do this podcast. So.
Well, we'll look out for that, and I guess we should round up now. Well, thanks for coming on, Max, and listeners should visit the Gray Zone, grayzoneproject.com.
Yes, and thanks a lot for having me. Thanks for all the work you guys are doing.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Dance and Resist, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. at Open Signal, Portland Community Media Center. Dance and Resist is Portland's only activist-led live television dance party. For Crying Out Meow Productions is proud to welcome back host and activist Kat Mio Garcia, joined this time by musician DJ Vicky for a night of resistance. Dance and Resist practices reclaiming community space through dance and revolutionary education. There will be a green screen photo booth, and costumes are highly encouraged. Again, that's Dance and Resist, too. Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. till midnight at Open Signal, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's 11:01, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And we've got the Dirtbag coming up, coming right up with neighbor Ted, Farmer Ted, with us. Okay, take it away.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar in Portland. Underground hip-hop artist Serengeti, also known as Kenny Dennis, returns to Portland for one night only. Local artist Champion Loves You, Mosley Wata, and DJ Cars and Trains will also perform. Again, that's Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar, 2415 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm. on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, we've reached the second Wednesday of the month. It's time for the Dirtbag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Our program focuses on growing edibles and enriching the soil and other things. And boy, do we have a full show today. Here with me is Farmer Ted, Ted Snyder,
Good morning.
Owner of Cully Farm Store and just a man about Cully. Or at least that's where he lives now. And we'll talk to him about the things that he does in his store and in his life, for that matter. We'll start off with a short phone talk with Chris Homanix with the Home Orchard Society about the upcoming fruit propagation fair and other classes that they're offering. We'll also be talking about seeds and seed companies. Ted is very knowledgeable in particularly Willamette Valley seed companies. I think they're mostly in Willamette Valley anyway. And at half past the hour, we've got our garden stumper, a little bit unusual for our stumping, but nevertheless, we've got it. Our Dirtbag Dictionary term today is double digging. Ted and I both have experience with that, and we'll offer our opinions on that. And I do have this new part of the dirt bag here, What's Annoying Glenn this month. I've got a doozy. All right, it's not a doozy, but it's just something that gets to me. It can be changed. All right. And then we will talk about another of Ted's passions is giving old tools new life. He's a whiz at it. And right along that with seeds and seed starting, preparing a bed, a garden bed, maybe for the first time. You just start gardening and you have a brand new plot there. What do you do? That so we will first talk to Chris, though, the board member of Home Orchard Society. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
I am well. Had a nice bike ride in. No rain. Well, it was a little heavy mist, but wasn't too cold. No wind to speak of. It's February.
Snowpocalypse has ended, it seems. Maybe.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, I spoke with Chris a couple of days ago, and he graciously agreed to talk with us about the fruit propagation fair. And if I was a betting person, and I'm not because I know math, I would say that we'll have Chris back on here in on the Dirtbag at a later point to talk about his at least another one of his passions, which is apparently is sleuthing old time fruit trees. Is that
what I love it.
Sum that up?
I
yeah, pretty well. All right, but that'll be for another time. We'll just give you a little tease right now. But we have the Fruit Propagation Fair coming up. It's a one-day-only affair in March. Can't even remember the date now, but you know it.
Yeah, it's we're coming up here on Sunday, March 10th
at
the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center in Canby, Oregon. And we're going to have, it's actually our 44th year.
Oh, man.
And it's kind of weird to think about that. This is the third year I've been with the organization and the second year I've been on the board. But I'm from Washington originally, and I've heard about HOS for years and was excited to get involved when I moved down here to the Portland-Eugene area. After I was doing some research, I found out that we're actually the oldest continuous propagation fair in the United States.
Huh.
So all of you Portlanders and everybody else, that's pretty exciting stuff. been around since the 70s, early 70s at least. It was founded by Larry McGraw. And Larry McGraw, I also found a little tidbit of information that's pretty interesting, that Larry McGraw and Milo Gibson together were friends in the 70s and onward. And they decided that they needed to collect and disseminate all this interesting fruit that they had been finding. And Larry McGraw went on to form the Home Orchard Society, and Milo Gibson went on to found the North American Fruit Explorers, which is a major fruit organization in the United States. So I don't think that piece of information is told much anymore, but I think that that's a pretty interesting thing. But anyway, the Fruit Propagation Fair, I know a number of listeners have been, and probably for years, but we have an amazing spread of apples, pears, grapes, plums, cherries, figs, peaches, kiwi, persimmon, and you just never know. Each year, different things show up. It's well organized. There's plenty of people there to answer questions. You can come and read about the great diversity that we have every year. You can bring your well-labeled scion to share with others, and it's just a really cool event. I'm sure you've been too, Glenn.
Oh yeah, many years. I'm a lifetime member of Home Orchard Society. I don't think I've been there all 50 years, but I think I joined in the early 80s, and then
excellent.
Then I lapsed on my membership for a few years, and then I became a lifer. Bought the member time, well, lifetime membership. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't lapse on a lifetime membership. So.
yeah. Good. Good point.
We also have a show in the fall too, in which we kind of on the other side show and showcase a lot of the fruit varieties that we're going to be offering here in the spring. So it's something for people to look forward to.
Yeah, the ideal order would be to attend the fruit show in the fall, taste the fruit that, man, I sure like that, and then come in March and grab Scion wood so you can either graft it yourself or have one of the HOS members graft it for you and get it then too. But go ahead. I interrupted and I apologize.
No, it's perfectly fine. You're right. It would be the ideal thing to come and check the fruit out in the fall, but you know, we just want people to get jumping on the bandwagon, come on in and find some great fruit material to propagate in their backyard or their small farm.
Yeah.
And not everything needs to be grafted. So we have grapes and and sometimes some other things that can be easily rooted in your grow setting, whatever you have, if you have a little bit of extra heat. Grapes fruit so easy.
Yes, and, yes. I've more than one time just have used grape prunings as markers for vegetable beds or rows or something like that, and sure enough, you know, just they graft in the just in the regular old earth out there. So, very easily done. And if you know, there's just how many varieties of Scion wood would you say they're going to be there? A couple hundred?
That's actually a conservative estimate in some ways. Just apples alone, there's generally, I would say, 200 plus. We're probably looking at, it's just a ballpark figure, but we're looking somewhere in the neighborhood of 500, 600 varieties of all the fruits I rattled off a moment ago.
Yeah.
In your orchard fruits. And sometimes other interesting things show up. And it only costs, if you're not a member, it only costs $7 to get in. If you got a family, it only costs $12 to get in. It's a family friendly event. And it's just generally a really good place to meet people of that have common ideas to what we're all trying to accomplish here.
Mm-hmm. And if you have questions, there's advice tables and information tables, and you can get, you know, there's some vendors there with tools or honey, I think, even.
Yes.
And probably not cider this time of year, but
but pre-cider. So we have, for instance, we have Cider Babies, which offers quite a lot of cider trees ready to be put in the ground. We have our own, what we call the plant corner, where the Arboretum, Tanya Lordy, the Arboretum manager, and others bring in all these really great plants, from one-year-old grafted fruit trees to strawberries, blueberries, grapes, you name it, for really good prices. And then we also have One Green World, of course, which, you know, you're longtime friends with Jim, and you know how much they offer. And and then we have Raw Oregon Honey again this year, which has a really good high quality raw honey, and they also have them in those, I guess they're called honey sticks, they're like little tubes.
Mm-hmm.
Kids love them. And and then we also have concentrates, which I know a number of listeners have used concentrates. They have a wide range of organic products for your orchard and your garden and your farm, from nutrients to sprays. And then we also have who we call the kitchen lady, and she has kind of some basic snack items and coffee fuel to keep you awake. It's kind of hard to, it's so bustling, it's kind of hard to fall asleep at that event, but it's nice to have a cup of coffee in your hand when you're selecting some Scion.
And so what should people bring besides masking tape?
Yeah, okay. So what I really recommend is bring a cup, black Sharpies, fine tip Sharpies, something to label. Sometimes people use regular masking tape. I really like 3M blue painter's tape.
Sure.
It holds up. You can grab it and it often will stay there for a couple years. It's nice to bring some bags so you can put everything in. It's fun to do a little research, kind of Google around, ask your friends, what are the varieties that work really well for you? And sure enough, when you go to the event, there's a good chance, you know, speaking of gambling again, it's a gamble, but there's a good chance that those varieties will actually be on the table somewhere. Not a guarantee,
uh-huh.
A good chance.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of people on their cell phones with their, you know, their list with their spouse. It's like, look for these cider apples, or
yes,
these are my grandma's favorite grapes. See if they have them, that sort of thing. So doing some research ahead of time is great. And just come ready to learn. Also come ready to share what you know. It's a really friendly event. Often at the tables, there's people walking around, all sorts of conversations just kind of happen, and there's a lot of camaraderie at the event.
Okay, so that's Sunday, not this Sunday, but March 10th.
March 10th.
At
10 o'clock.
10 to 4?
10 o'clock to 4 p.m.
All right, mm-hmm. And come early for a greatest selection. So with the price
that's
of admission...
True, the early bird gets the worm.
With the price of admission, you are entitled then to however many Scion wood pieces you'd like, but be realistic.
Yes,
I mean nobody's gonna
emphasize, though, it's kind of like it is a first come first serve, and there's always a rush in the beginning to get in, so there is some value in coming a little bit later.
Yeah.
You just come right in the door and you have to wait, but we do say that people are limited to one piece of Scion per variety, and that way,
yeah,
that way, some of these things are exceedingly rare. We have a lot of fruit explorers, which are bringing in really rare Scion, really high quality rare Scion. So it's important just to take one piece.
Yeah.
But there's so much to choose from.
That's right, right. Well, Chris, we appreciate you taking the time to let us know about the fruit propagation fair at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby.
Thanks, Glenn. And I just want to let people know, if they want to become a member, then just go to homeorchardsociety.org/join. You can either fill out a little paper document, send it in, and boom, you're a member. You can also sign up online. And you can also find us on Facebook. There's HOS Fruit Propagation Fair. You can find the event listing where you can click that you're interested and that you're going.
And I think also that if you join at the door, you get free admission.
You get in free.
Yep. All right. That's something for everybody there. All right, Chris. Well, we'll see you. Maybe we'll see you at the Fruit Propagation Fair then.
Sounds great, Glenn.
Okay.
I hope you guys have a great day.
Yep. Thanks again. Okay. Well, let's take our first musical break here. And all of these have to do with digging in the dirt, from double digging to just planting seeds, I guess. So... if you have any gardening questions, please feel free to give us a call, 503-231-8187. After we listen to I Can Dig It from Booker T and the MGs, we'll be back to talk about artichokes and cardoon, our plants of the month in this case. I can dig it. This might be a good time for Ted. I get a kick out of this. Ted brought in a definition of dirtbag. And I thought he might have been stalking me for the last 50 years. So go ahead and read this definition of dirtbag.
I found this when I knew I was going to be on the program. I had to look up the definition of dirtbag, and I found one through the Urban Dictionary that says dirtbag is a person who is committed to a given lifestyle to the point of abandoning employment and other societal norms in order to pursue said lifestyle.
Yeah, I like that. Well, we can go with that. That's just great. I'm going to have to write that down and show my wife. And she says, yeah, that's you. All right. Anyway, let's see. Can we go to Victoria now? Yes, we can. Hello, Victoria.
Yes. So my question is, I am volunteering to start plants for a spring plant sale for an organization out in Forest Grove called Dairy Creek Community Food Web. And so I'm going to do cruciferous. And I was just wondering, do you have any idea about the best temperature to start those seeds and to grow them?
Yes. And one of the best catalogs that I've received for that, although I haven't received them for some 15, maybe 20 years, and this is Johnny's Seeds.
Oh, okay.
And but I'm sure online they would have this information as to what temperature is ideal for germination.
Okay.
Of those. But I would say it's probably about 70 degrees.
Okay. I have some cheap heating mats, and last year I did the same thing. I started plants for this plant sale. And I think I cooked most. I was wondering, do you think that foam would, because I don't have a rheostat to change the temperature on these, home.
Well, here's what I do. And I'm not going to tell you what the source of my heat is, because it's too dangerous.
Okay.
But I have bought some years ago a little stick thermometer is what I call it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you'd find it in a kitchen supply store or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's essentially a soil thermometer, but soil thermometers are huge.
Right.
And for measuring compost temperature or soil, but so you can stick it down in several inches. But one of these, which is only 5 inches long or something like that, is very light, and I can just stick it into the soil and monitor the temperature.
Okay.
No, they're not very expensive, and it's probably better than starting over when you fried.
Yes. And also I would like to, if I may, promote a seed swap that I am helping organize in Forest Grove.
I don't think there's any problem with that.
Okay, so it's this Saturday, the 16th, from 10 to 1 at St. Bede's Church, which is in the older neighborhood of Forest Grove. You can find it on Dairy Creek Community Food Web, either Facebook or .com or .org. And this is our second annual, and the first one was very successful. So we're getting ready for that. And so it's free. They don't even have to bring seeds. And there's going to be, for a small fee, there's going to be tool sharpening there, too, as well.
Huh. Well, the nice thing about seed swaps like this is that you don't need a full packet of seeds, and this is a good way to try other varieties without a big investment.
Right. And there's going to be all kinds of expert people who will be able to answer questions. Plus, there'll be a lot of literature that we've photocopied and will have for folks to just take home with themselves.
Great. Okay, that's in Forest Grove.
That's in Forest Grove, St. Bede's, 10 to 1 this Saturday, the 16th of February.
Thanks for calling, Victoria. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, let's get to artichokes and cardoon. You grow both of those, Ted?
I've got some artichokes in right now, yeah.
All right. Why do you like artichokes? Easy to grow? They're perennials somewhat?
Somewhat. They're short-lived perennials, and I like them because they have such a beautiful presentation in the landscape.
Yeah.
Extremely ornamental, both when they're growing and when they're blossoming.
Indeed. So you've started some seeds, is that what you're saying? Or you said you have some started, or?
I have some growing now 3 seasons old.
Aha. Uh-huh. Do you do anything special to overwinter them?
I cut them back to nothing, and then I just throw some straw over the top. I actually put a couple of empty coffee bags over them with this last super cold spell, just mm-hmm. to give them another layer. And I'm getting ready when they start sprouting in another. Well, they've started sprouting now, but when they start growing, I'm getting ready to separate out some what we call pups or slips. And now that they're 3 years old, they're not just one plant. They're uh-huh. one center stalk with several side pieces. And you can take those side pieces and cut them off the main stem and plant them out for new plants. And
Are these slips above ground or?
The roots are below ground.
Okay.
But you can see there's a central stalk, and then there's you know, a circle of other ones coming out from them.
Okay.
And it's easy to see that there's more than one.
And you would take a knife?
I take a full-size shovel.
Oh, a shovel.
Yeah. And just slip it down between the main stalk and the side sprout.
I see.
And just kind of pry in there. It's usually, you know, 6 to 8 inches deep that I try to go to sever that root. And then I've got a new plant. And since uh-huh. they are short-lived perennials, you know, the main one is going to live, you know, 3 years productively, 5 years, it's going to just go away. And so you can start, particularly if you have a really strong plant, you can select that one to take your pups from and start new plants. And you can do that pretty much forever. You can just keep uh-huh. every 3 or 4 years pulling pups off, and then you can keep that variety going.
How many pups can you pull off of a mature plant?
Well, it depends on how many it sprouts out.
Can you take all of them that it sprouts?
I can, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it's usually 3 or 4 per plant.
Yeah. They're a pretty good-sized plant when they're full-grown, so you do need some space in the garden.
Yeah. 3 foot on center is generally minimum, uh-huh. 3 to 5 feet apart.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's artichoke.
Yep.
And what about cardoon? It's a cousin or
the
a
same
sister?
Same family, Scolemus, and they are, but they the flowers on the cardoon are kind of insignificant. They're very fibrous, and they're much smaller than the artichoke flower, and so you don't eat the flower on the cardoon. You eat the stalk,
uh-huh.
the leaf stalk, and it helps to blanch it by. In September or so, when the plant is big and robust, you tie up all the branches around the center, and then wrap it with traditionally just newspaper to wrap it and keep all the light out from it, and uh-huh. it turns those stalks. It gets rid of the green part of the stalk and makes it less bitter and more tender, and then you can harvest those stalks and eat those.
How would you eat them or use them?
Well, they're kind of spiny. There's a few varieties out there now. There's a Porto spineless that's supposed to have fewer spines, but you have to peel them to get the spines off. They're mm-hmm. kind of like peeling celery. It's kind of got some strings and spines, and then you boil it for like 30 minutes. And then it's ready.
Just as its own.
Just as its own, you can add it to other things, but it's considered somewhat of a delicacy.
Like spinach or something. I mean, just a side dish.
Or carrots or parsnips if they were served as a cooked side dish.
Yeah.
With butter and salt and pepper.
So they are in the same family, but you use them completely differently.
Correct.
But
in the landscape, they can be very similar and very ornamental.
Going back to the artichokes, I've seen pictures of honeybees in artichoke blossoms, and there's at least a dozen in one of them that I've photographed.
Yeah, I always check my I cut the main artichoke and eat it, and then as the that usually stimulates more flowers, and I'll eat some of those, but I always try to leave some for the pollinators. And frequently I'll check those at the end of the day, just before sundown, and there'll be bumblebees sleeping in there, yeah, overnight. It's their little bed for the night.
Well, the bees can just bury themselves so you can't see them, and you just see the petals or the anthers or whatever they are moving where the bees hang, digging for the nectar gold.
Yeah, so they don't mind spines.
No. Okay, well, that's our plants of the month this time, artichoke and cardoon. Sounds like would be a good addition to a garden.
Excellent. It needs full sun, though.
Yeah.
Plant them on the south side.
Like most of our veggies do. Okay, well, we're running here right up against the half the hour. Let's take our second musical break. Just a little bit of the playing in the dirt from Robert Cray. Back in
local
about 1985 or something like that. Playing in the dirt.
Now you know that I'm married, and baby, so are you. But right now we're not thinking past this little rendezvous. This point in our lives, so we might as well enjoy it, take it for what it's worth, 'cause we're gonna...
Well, it's a different kind of playing in the dirt than what we're talking about here today, but that's good title anyway, good tune too, of Robert Cray from False Accusations. Okay, well, we are a little bit past half past the hour, and Tammy's doing double duty in there, but it might be time for our Garden Stumper theme, and is she ready for the Garden Stumper theme? Oh, yes! Caught her unawares. We'll come back after this. Okay, well, staying in the artichoke vein, I've learned that California produces about 100% of the artichokes, commercial artichokes, in these United States. And to that end, we have this garden stumper, who, in 1947, that's a clue, at the age of 22, that's another clue. And then, this is the main clue that's going to give this away, maybe, still going by her given name, was crowned Castroville, California's first artichoke queen. So, if you know the answer to that, or if you have a gardening question, it's the same number. Believe it, 503-231-8187. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Forgotten. Shanti! Sorry, good morning, Shanti. You're with the Dirtbag. He who eschews
as much as possible about asparagus. I want to plant some. It's really expensive, and I want to do it right, and so that they can live there for until I croak and have a lot of asparagus every year. But I've never done it yet.
Okay, well, I'm sure Ted has an opinion on this. And the first thing I'll say is, don't do what I did, which is start them from seed.
Okay, yeah, I kind of got a hint on that.
Yeah, that just takes too long to get production. Spring for the root.
Okay. I understand that I have to do that. And was kind of one thing would be, is does anybody know where the least expensive good quality asparagus is available? I have every seed catalog you could imagine.
Oh, you can get them locally. I don't think you'd need to order them necessarily. Locally.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the garden centers and nurseries will have asparagus crowns, in a bucket or a pan of some sort, packed in sawdust, and they should be available, you know, by now or in March, to buy as crowns.
So I don't even have friends who are growing it anymore. One who was passed away, and I didn't get myself to learn from him. I just always ate the asparagus he gave me.
Well, the books will say, you know, dig a big trench and bury it. And I don't know that I agree with that totally. Ted, what's your thought on that?
Well, they used to say, you know, dig like a 3-foot deep bed and amend it with sand for drainage and all this kind of stuff.
Dig to China.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
And now they're saying, well, you know, it's fine to just dig a 12-inch, 1-foot deep trench. And the most important thing that I've heard is to make a little mound or a V in the bottom of the trench and spread the roots out over the V so that they're pointing away from the crown of the root start, and then start filling your trench back up.
But why? What's the idea of the so deep? I mean, even a foot is pretty deep.
Yeah.
I guess just to give it what it wants.
Okay, Shanti, here's your task. You know, you get
okay,
4 or 6 of them. You know, I don't know what they're going to cost. What, 25 cents a piece or something? Maybe no. Not even that much.
Oh, no, they're
more
very
than
costly.
Buck,
yeah, very
buck
costly.
And a half,
buck,
2 bucks.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, see,
yeah.
I planted mine so many years ago.
3 for 7 kind of thing. Yeah.
Woo! Mm-hmm. All right. Plant one at 4 inches, one at 6 inches, one at 8 inches, 10 and 12. And then you'll know. And you'll call in next year and say, those ones that I planted 4 inches died.
I did recently reread Ruth Stout's No Work Gardening book.
Yeah.
And she was the queen of mulching.
Yeah.
And she said that she just threw asparagus crowns on the ground and put some straw and hay over the top of them, and they produced for years.
Yeah.
Where do you think is the best place to get hay that doesn't have noxious seeds in it? Is there such a thing as organic hay?
There is. For mulching like that, it's better to use what's called straw, which is usually a wheat straw or an oat straw. And assumably all the wheat and oats have been harvested off with a combine to go for grain, and then what's left over is the straw, and so there shouldn't be very much seed in it. And most of the garden centers have both straw and hay, and straw is for mulch.
Yeah. Does Cully Farm Store carry
it does.
Straw?
We always have wheat straw primarily.
Where's the best place to go for farm stores around Midtown? I just live Midtown, not too far from where...
Well, you can come visit me at the Cully Farm Store, which is 42nd in Alberta.
42nd Alberta?
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, I've been by there. Okay, good, but it's been a couple of years. I just don't have a car for the last couple of years, so I'm not as...
I do deliveries.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. Wonderful.
You bet. Great.
Good day.
Thank you. Same to you. Okay, Paul. Paul has an answer for us. Who was the first artichoke queen in 1947?
Marilyn Monroe.
That's it. Well, way to go, Paul, but you probably know you don't win a prize.
I'll try to get up to 10th place.
Well, that would be worth something right there.
Sounds great.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
You too.
Yeah, Norma Jean is at the time. I guess that's her name, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, we've made some references now to Cully Farm Store, and let's just talk about that. We do want to talk about some Willamette Valley seed companies here, but I'd like to know more about Cully Farm Store. What do you have there? What do you do there? How long have you been in business?
I started the Cully Farm Store 3 years ago, and primarily as a source for the neighborhood to get chicken feed and rabbit feed and all those sorts of things. and fertilizers, organic fertilizers from concentrates, and cover crop seeds, and basically to support the food growers of the neighborhood and the region. And it was kind of a slow start to the business, and so there was a lot of times when I was just sitting around with no customers, and I said, well, I got to have something to do. So I started bringing old tools to work to repair them and get them ready to use, and people came by and said, hey, can I buy that? And so I've kind of melded the business into tool repair and tool selling of vintage garden tools that are inherently, in my mind, better than brand new garden tools.
Yeah, those old quality ones. I mean, the older ones oftentimes have better quality, better.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's called, the neck or the shank.
The shovels and hoes in particular have much better steel to them. And so when I sharpen them up with a file, they stay sharp for the whole season. And so it's kind of like a once a year sharpening rather than, you know, once every row.
And you offer that service too.
I do.
Bring your tools in to sharpen.
And frequently I can sharpen them while you wait.
Uh-huh. Depending how busy you are.
Yep.
Okay. But, and then you have vegetable starts too.
Which, I do.
Which leads, or you will have.
In March.
But you don't have seeds there, at least not yet.
No.
Okay. But you are very knowledgeable of seed companies and whatnot. Do you have some favorites here? You have a seed catalog here in front of you.
Yeah. I brought in today a seed catalog from Adaptive Seeds, which is based just outside of Eugene, or outside of Corvallis. And there's a whole bunch of seed growers in the Willamette Valley. There's a long tradition of that for certain things. And Adaptive has really made a name for themselves in working with some of the smaller seed growers to market their seeds as well as what they grow themselves. They do strictly open pollinated seeds, no hybrids, and they do an annual trip around the world to different places, Europe or Asia, and collect seeds from other seed growers. And wherever they go, they collect seeds and then grow them out and select and market them to all of us lucky people.
Hmm. And this is their catalog here?
Yes.
So
it's a free catalog. Somebody, Adaptive Seeds.
Go online and find all about it.
Yeah. And I believe they have a couple of seed racks here in Portland, but I'm not sure where they are this year. I didn't look that one up.
Nurseries.
Yeah, I think maybe Naomi's had some, and maybe Garden Fever had some.
Uh-huh. Okay. So locally produced seeds. Probably.
Locally produced seeds.
Uh-huh.
And collected from all over the world.
Right. And your starts come locally, too. You're not growing all your starts.
I grow some, and particularly the culinary herbs is what I concentrate on. But I also work with Wildcat Mountain Farm up outside of Sandy and Escada. And they've been in business for, 30 years or more. And they do a really great job of vegetable seeds and culinary herbs and flowers. And I get a weekly delivery from them.
Hmm.
And so all my stuff is super fresh. And as soon as they get a little pot bound or anything, I take them home and plant them out myself and get fresh stuff in so that when people buy it, it's really going to work for them.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that won't be till March, you said at the earliest.
Middle of March, you'll start getting those in.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to, we'll go to our last musical break here, and then we'll come back and talk about the starting a bed, in which we'll tie right in with double digging, because that might be the time there. What we have here is Double Bubble. It's kind of close to double digging, but this is the Crusaders. Another old-time group and song. Mm-hmm. Well, it seems a shame to cut into that one, but that's what we do here. We got to dig in the dirt. Okay, I'm talking with Ted, Farmer Ted. On his phone, he says, Farmer Ted, how may I be of service to you? But his name is Ted Snyder. Coley Farm Store. And we were just talking that you have not only chicken and rabbit food, but goat, too.
Yeah, there's a surprising amount of goats in the neighborhood. We had a goat dairy for a number of, about a decade until the goats got a little old and they're kind of retired and they're just pets now. But they were milking twice a day, the goats, and supplying goat milk to the neighborhood for a lot of kids who were lactose intolerant. And they're a great resource of goat care. And so it's kind of like a lot of other people said, well, we can keep goats too. And there's, you know, every five or six blocks in the Coley neighborhood, there seems to be another backyard with a couple of goats in it.
Coley, some parts is, you know, gentrifying, but other parts are still more farm-like than rural-like.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, let's talk about, first of all, double digging. Just, you know, you read about this. What is it? Is it worth it? And how hard is it?
It's definitely worth it. The theory is to get more than 12 inches deep of loose soil that the plants can root into. And basically what it is to scoop out a shovel full of soil and then dig down another shovel full and loosen the soil below that and then put the scoop back in. So you're two shovels deep in your loosening and preparing the soil.
And this, at least from my experience and perspective, this would be maybe a one-time thing, maybe a two-time thing, but you know, after a while, your soil shouldn't need that.
And it's maybe even counterproductive after it's done to, you know, you don't really want to do it every year.
Because you're destroying the tilth, the physical quality of the soil. And, you know, nature goes to great lengths to have good tilth, you know, good structure there.
Yeah.
And so I'd say this is most appropriate when you're just starting a plot.
Right. If you're going from a grass lawn to a garden bed.
So let's just break this down a little bit more. So if you had grass there, the first thing you would do is probably strip off the grass.
That's certainly a good way to go.
And you know, there's various ways that you can do that, you know, from a sod cutter, which is hardly recommended because those suckers are heavy, and how would you get it home, and is it worth it? And if you're just starting, I wouldn't recommend having a big plot to start with your first year. So maybe just a shovel to get rid of the grass.
Yep.
Okay. So then I've seen pictures about double digging where, you know, you have lines or strings or whatever, you just eyeball it, you know, 6 inches, a line every 6 inches, you can imagine. And with your shovel, you're going to take out a shovel full.
Yep.
Maybe the whole, make a trench.
Yeah, generally I'll be working a 5 foot wide bed.
Okay.
And I'll dig it, you know, a 5 foot wide trench and then move back 6 inches and dig the next one.
So you're removing that
The first
soil.
One I remove and
right.
pile up.
Uh-huh.
And then the next one I...
You also kind of remove that one too, don't you need to?
Well, I just...
Or no.
Turn it over and throw it into the first one.
But
so that
but,
I'm moving the soil from the compacted stuff into the trench.
The first trench is kind of two shovels depth.
No, it's really just one. But then you take your shovel and you just kind of put your shovel in and wiggle it.
The lower level. Okay.
And you're just loosening that up. You don't need to remove that and turn it over and stir it and everything so much as just penetrate it and get some air down in there. Some people like to use a garden fork rather than a shovel.
Yeah, they're bigger than a shovel, but have five or so tines.
Well, there is that too. That's the U-bar digger or is a little different, and that's another way to do to make deep digging, double digging, without disturbing the soil. I think the U-bar digger, I think, is better as to loosen up the bed the second and third year.
Yes.
After you've done some real double digging.
Okay, so now to set the stage here, we've got a double deep, or not a double, just you've moved the soil from one trench, you've loosened below that there with a garden fork, or your garden fork's not a bad idea.
Yep.
A garden fork is similar to a pitchfork, but sturdier and wider tines, and fewer of them generally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then you step back 6 inches and dig.
And you dig another trench, but you throw the soil into the first trench.
Right, so you're not backbreaking, moving it.
Most of the time you're trying to turn it completely upside down when you throw it in.
And this is just the top 4 to 6 inches, we'll say.
Yep.
And then you loosen the bottom of that.
And
then just keep going back.
And dig the next trench.
So that's double digging.
Throwing it into that trench.
Right.
And so in 5 feet wide, most of my beds are 25 or 30 feet long. I can do that, with a brand new bed in about an hour.
Uh-huh.
Hour and a half, depending on how compacted the soil is.
And that's the main reason why we would be double digging, is because your soil is compacted.
Yeah.
Now, in subsequent years, you mentioned maybe the second, third year, you would use the
Broad fork U-bar digger. There's a couple of different names of them. I've got a 16-inch long tines on my broad fork.
And essentially what you do there is you just stand on it to insert it into the ground and then just wiggle it.
Rear back on it and pull the tines up through the soil. And it doesn't turn the soil over and mix it so much as just introduce air down into the lower depths of the soil.
And that might be appropriate for the second and third year. Beyond that, I might argue you shouldn't be doing anything to your soil.
Right.
Even rototilling it.
No.
Because we don't want to confuse air in your soil and fluffy soil, or fluffy soil with good soil, for one. And what we want is pore space, P-O-R-E, in the soil. Space for water, air, microorganisms, you know, bacteria, the protozoa, the other things to take refuge and get eaten and whatnot. I mean, that's this pore space. And by turning it or rototilling it, you just destroy that.
Yeah.
So
I do like fluffy soil about an inch deep on the surface.
Yeah.
Sowing small seeds.
To that too, but in my garden, you know, my beds haven't been hand turned or rototilled in 20 years. And, you know, I can dig down easily 3, 4, 5, 6 inches, you know, so it's just soft, you know, in the spring when I'm out there.
Yeah.
It's just soft.
You can plunge your bare hand into it and meet little resistance.
Right. And so that takes time to get there, but that's the goal,
would
argue.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
And if you were to go in and rototill that, and then it rained hard on it, that would not be good.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to understand, and it's harder to get there. You know, to good quality soil.
Yep.
Right. Okay, so that's our dirtbag dictionary term, double digging, and we. Many years ago, probably 15 years ago, we had John Jevons on the show, and did he write about double digging?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember whose book I'm reading this in, but he had, you know, one of the longest titled books in the world, and then he made it longer, the title. It used to be How to Grow More Vegetables on Less Land Than You Thought Possible, or something like that.
Something like that.
And then he expanded that to How to Grow More Vegetables, Seeds, and Nuts.
Oh, yeah.
On something else, but it's still a good book. It's one that's I consult occasionally. Now, I don't consult many gardening books these days, but I still do look at that one.
My favorite one right now is Steve Solomon's second book, I guess it is, Gardening. In the hard times, gardening when it counts, that he his original book was How to Garden in Organic yeah. Gardening in West of the Cascades.
Yeah.
And now he lives in Tasmania and Australia, and so he's a little more general in his recommendations, but he's just got some really great insight into long-range fertility and particularly in water conservation.
Which are things that we should all be concerned about. I mean, just last night I gave a presentation at the Multnomah County Master Gardeners, and I talked about how I don't mind working hard once, but I don't, you know, I want my garden to be self-sustainable more than anything. I mean, obviously a garden by definition is not, but the more tasks that I can do to make it easier on me so I don't burn out, which means it'll be better for the soil too.
That's a good philosophy, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, here's this definition again here. Yeah. Abandoning employment and other societal norms. Okay, well, that reminds me here. What's annoying me this month? Actually, this has been annoying me for a while. And I do have to say that I find that this egregious mistake, mostly by, can I say OPB on KBOO's airwaves? I think so. But I don't know where they get their announcers. I shouldn't say it that way, because by and large, they're great. But they're not local. And what annoys me is that they pronounce our state name with two syllables. Oregon has three syllables. It's not Oregon. It's Oregon. All right. That annoys me. And I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian, so I think I have some cred here.
You got it right.
That's right. Okay, you got that right. It's a Lynyrd Skynyrd song. All right, Tammy, this is the last time I'll say our ace engineer, Tammy, did a great job as usual. But she's retiring, and that's to be expected after 30 years. But we'll miss her. I'll have to give Jim the news gently.
I'll miss you, too.
All right.
A lot.
Well, maybe we'll still, paths will cross at some point.
There you go.
That's our story so far. Thanks you much, Ted.
Thank you, Glenn.
Appreciate it. Go see Ted at Coley Farm Store. I'll be back with Jim in March, whatever 4 weeks from now is. Be well.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell. What did jazz artists Christian Scott Atunde Adjua, Pharoah Sanders, Steve Turay, Terrence Blanchard, and Marcus Strickland have in common? One, they are all performing at this year's PDX Jazz Festival. And two, they have all been featured on my program, Jazz in the New Millennium. Each one-hour episode focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective. The weekly show is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium, but it can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu at kboo.fm, clicking on audio, then podcasts, and scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. For the convenience of those who might be interested in attending one or more of these concerts, we have grouped the PDX jazz artists together into a special mini-season. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at kboo.fm.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday, Friday,